Welcome to a Tuesday edition of Locked On NBA. On today's show, we'll talk about Jimmy Butler's shaky future in Minnesota and what that means for the rest of the roster.
Then we'll break down Dwayne Wade's return to Miami. Plus, we'll get into the latest news and notes from around the league. Thank you so much for listening and for subscribing. Now let's get to the show.
You are Locked On the NBA. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
All right, let's do this. Welcome to Locked On NBA, your daily NBA podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. My name is Wes Goldberg. I'm a credentialed writer covering the NBA for FanSided. You can find me on Twitter at WC Goldberg.
And I'm David Ramil, a credentialed NBA writer who covers the league at large for FanSided. You can follow me and my writing on Twitter at DRamil13.
Dwayne Wade will have one last dance in South Beach. Chris Paul will be on a maintenance program in Houston, but let's start in Minnesota, where reports from The Athletic's Shams Charina and others have surfaced that Jimmy Butler, acquired by the Timberwolves last summer from the Bulls, is meeting with Minnesota's top brass in a, quote, last-ditch effort, end quote, to discuss his future. The report further indicates that the relationship between Butler and his teammates has completely deteriorated and that Tom Thibodeau, the team's head coach and general manager, is caught in the middle. Additional reports indicate that Karl-Anthony Towns, the team's young superstar center, won't sign an extension with the team until the Butler situation is all figured out once and for all. It's a short story long, David. Everything's going really smoothly in Minnesota.
Yes, it's been a phenomenal offseason for the Timberwolves. I mean, finally making the playoffs after three decades or however long it's been. They finally they didn't get swept out of the playoffs, but they didn't have a very impressive run. And then you're kind of hoping that it'll be the stepping point for the future. They've got young talent there, Karl-Anthony Towns. They've got Andrew Wiggins. They've got a superstar in Butler, Tom Thibodeau, well-respected coach, et cetera. And then all of a sudden, things are really, really falling apart. And it's something that you and I have talked about on occasion when we talked about Butler's potential free agency and whether or not he's angling for a trade. Now, we don't know what the situation is. As Charania, spoke about it, he's reported, and others from The Athletic have reported as well, this meeting is to discuss that future, whether it implies that he wants to be traded or whether or not he wants the young players traded. We're not quite sure. Where do you feel on that?
This reminds me of the Damian Lillard meeting with top brass from last year, right? And that report came out, like, oh boy, Portland, they're going to have to start thinking about trading Dame. Like, what's going on here? Is Lillard on the move? Right. Trade deadline stuff, blah, 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 blah. And it just turned out that Damian Lillard wouldn't be like, hey, no, I think we should play this way. Let's change a couple things. Let's do it this way. And then Portland went off on their annual, tear through the league in the second half of the season.
Right.
So it might just be that, right? It might just be like Jimmy Butler is like, hey, you should take Andrew Wiggins off the court more. I don't think it is either, but I don't want to jump to the conclusions. That said, the conclusion I'm going to jump to is Minnesota should blow this thing up because it is not working. And when I say blow it up, hear me out. Fire Thibs, that's not working. We all know it's not working. It's only a matter of, he's not going to turn this thing around by signing Luol Deng. Like, this is, having Deng and Taj Gibson and then eventually Joakim Noah is not going to just magically turn Minnesota. What are we talking about here? Fire Thibs, go get a good young coach, trade Jimmy Butler for whatever you can get. Yeah, you traded a bunch of stuff, a first round pick, Chris Dunn, you traded, Zach LaVine, obviously, you moved some nice pieces to get Jimmy Butler. That's a sunk cost. You can't think of it that way. Just like the Pelicans couldn't think about Boogie Cousins, by trading Buddy Hield in a first-round pick for him because he was coming off of 20. He's not the same product. Jimmy Butler right now isn't happy. He's not the product that you traded for, right? You need to trade him now because he's going to be worth more now than he is at the trade deadline. He just is. And so you've got to trade him now. Fire Thibs right now. Why not? It's better to fire him now than 1 week into the season when you're 0-4 or whatever. Just get rid of it. Rebuild properly around Karl-Anthony Towns because that guy's a superstar. Try to figure out the Wiggins thing. I mean, if you don't, you're kind of screwed because of the extension you gave him. But rebuild around Towns properly because I don't see where this doesn't go up from here. I just don't see how it can.
Now, the counter to that is that ownership, Glenn Taylor, who has been a longtime owner for the Timberwolves, has committed to Thibodeau and is likely to remain so. And if that's the case, then this team is going to be built around Thibodeau and Butler. And the person who is likely to be on his way out then is Karl-Anthony Towns.
Oh, my God.
We could debate if that's the right decision or not.
Is there a debate? There's not a debate. That's the wrong decision. There's no debate there. That's the wrong decision. It has nothing to do with Towns or Butler. It has everything. You don't build around Thibodeau. First of all, you can't let him be general manager anymore. That is, it is so insane to me that that is a thing in the NBA. Like, that is so insane to me that that is a thing. That's two really, like, we've talked about this before. Those are, like, a good general manager spends, what, 100 hours a week in the office? And that has nothing to do with coaching. It's crazy.
It's hard to evaluate players, objectively when you're in the locker room with them, when you're traveling with them, when you see their kind of behavior much more closely, I think, than the typical general manager is. You're kind of watching from afar as a GM or as a front office person. And I think it has to change when you're coaching these players, when you see them roll their eyes, when you give an instruction, when you see a player, you know, maybe kind of half-assed on a particular play because they're kind of tired after playing three games in two nights. And, you know, these kinds of things.
Zach Lowe put it really well on a podcast last week. He said, GMs see players for what they are. Coaches see players for what they could be. Yeah, and you kind of need to, and you need those two different perspectives. And you can't if you're one person.
So, look, I could say you don't want to take a loss on as far as Butler is concerned, but I don't know that. Look, I mean, maybe the culture is fractured beyond repair, and the biggest opponent of building a strong culture might be Karl Anthony Towns, and we're not privy to those kinds of details. I mean, we had thought that maybe the Wiggins Butler relationship was beyond repair. I think at the base of this is the fact that there is a culture that Thibodeau, Butler, and those Chicago Bulls players have in place, which was, you know, endless work and dedication. And for whatever reasons, Wiggins and or Towns just don't fit into that model. Whether or not they're maybe a little bit less dedicated, whether or not they're as obsessive as Butler and Thibodeau would like them to be, clearly there's a problem there, and they resent Towns.
Am I wrong for not buying in that? Like, first of all, Towns is 22 years old. He's probably been the most talented player on his basketball team since he was 12 years old. Right. We've heard so much about how Thibs works his players and how Jimmy Butler is so maniacal about hard work. Look, Butler wouldn't get the reputation for being maniacal about his hard work if he were just a hard worker, right? Like, you can work hard without being maniacal. We've talked about this about, you know, the Heat, for example, who, you know, we talk about that a lot on Locked On Heat, is, you know, how much is too much in regards to the hashtag culture, in regards to Pat Riley and his old school approach. And there's a level there where, you know, maybe there is a little bit too much. You know, we've heard about all the mental health issues in the NBA, and a lot of that is to do with the stress and the stuff like that. And, you know, I wonder if it's just like, maybe Tibbs and Jimmy are just kind of old school, and Jimmy right now isn't that happy with Tibbs. I don't know. I feel like that there's a lot of maybe rumors being leaked out by Minnesota that those guys aren't working hard enough, or maybe they are. Maybe they're working hard enough, and those other guys are working too hard. It's a theory. I don't buy that. I don't buy into this idea that Karl Anthony Towns is just coasting. I don't see that as the reality here. He's too good for that to be the case.
Yeah, coasting probably isn't the right word, but maybe not as obsessive. And that's something you pointed out as well. And I think that's a concern. Look, I mean, maybe that's where that lack of a general manager definitely fits into play. Somebody that can objectively say, look, Towns is much more talented than anybody else in the roster. He's working just as hard as we need him to. He's a great player. Let's make him the focal point. And Jimmy, you're going to have to take a back seat to that. And maybe that's Butler's concern. Maybe Thibodeau is able to make and accept that point and say, you know what, Jimmy, if you're not willing to play second banana to Karl Anthony Towns, then it's time for you to move on, and you can see what you can get for him in an open market.
Right? And I just think structurally it doesn't work in Minnesota. I think the GM coach thing doesn't work, and you can't really demote Thibs, right? You got to basically, you're in or you're out. You got to fire him. And then with Jimmy Butler, his contract is up and it doesn't look like he's re-signing. And you can still give Towns the extension and keep him under that rookie scale kind of. So just what makes sense logically is you trade Butler for whatever you can, fire Thibs right now, find a new young head coach or even a placeholder coach and just try to figure it out with Towns and rebuild around him, because I just don't see what the other, it might not be the preferred route, but I don't know what the other path for them is. But, it's not in Jamal Crawford, right? He opted out of his contract with Minnesota earlier this summer. We'll talk about where he might end up next. But first, things in the NBA can change every day, like wherever Jimmy Butler plays. That means you need a daily podcast to break down everything that's happening around in the league. That's what we do here at Locked On NBA. So make sure to subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes, follow us on Spotify, or find us on whatever podcast app that you use. The Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Bad news for us, great news for Brent Berry. Brent Berry is joining the Spurs front office. We'll talk about that later on, but let's get to the return of Hall of Famer to the shores of Biscayne Bay. In a nearly 10-minute video released late Sunday night, Dwayne Wade announced that he'd be returning for, quote, one last dance, a 16th season in the NBA, with the team that drafted him, the Miami Heat, after months of speculation about, is he going to stay? Is he going to retire? Is he just going to hang out with Gabriel Union for the rest of his life? Is he going to play one more season in Miami? Great arguments for both sides ultimately decide, hey, I got one more year left in me. Dwayne Wade's going back to Miami. How big of a deal, David, is that for the Heat? Is this more than just kind of the emotional return?
No, absolutely. I think he fits in well on the court. He fits in from a locker room perspective, from a financial one. He brings so much to that team as far as being able to put fans in seats, a last opportunity to see the greatest player in franchise history. And I think it's just a fantastic addition. Look, we're not surprised by it. You know, we have talked about it for a while. In August, he told me in Orlando that he was going to be coming back to Miami if he was going to be playing anywhere at all. And it seemed like it was likely that he was going to be re-signing with Miami. So we're not exactly surprised by this, but it's been a fantastic move and a lot of speculation regarding what the holdup was. But now that he's committed, and I know that it was an arduous decision, at least that's what he said in the 10-minute video, it was a difficult decision for him to make. You know, the counterpoint to every thought of whether or not he'd re-sign was, is he ignoring his kids? Is he not spending enough time with his family, his wife, et cetera? And that's, you know, that is the challenge of every NBA player is figuring out that balance between home life and your professional life. Heck, that's one that a lot of us share. And we don't have to be in the NBA in order to feel that way. But at the same time, he's made his decision to come back to Miami. And I think he'll bring a lot to the table. It's something that we talked about on our own Locked On Heat podcast, which you should definitely be listening to. And I think that he's still capable at 36 of bringing something on the court. He's an excellent playmaker. He might not be the kind of long-range shooter, and he doesn't have the athletic explosion he once did. But we saw moments there in the second half of the season after he was acquired by Miami in the playoffs during the regular season where he could be Miami's best player at times. And I think it's great to see that from a fan's perspective, from a Heat fan's perspective, from a fan of the NBA in general.
Definitely their best offensive player at times, for sure. And look, this is a guy who started last season with Cleveland and didn't finish last season with Cleveland, but I think there's a narrative out there that a lot of people kind of say, look at his exit from the Cavaliers as, oh, he was washed up, you know, and he left during the trade deadline, and that was it, and ended up going back to Miami, and it was kind of a feel-good story, but he was Cleveland's best bench player when he was there. He left not because he was washed up. He left because they needed a culture change at the deadline real quick. And he was kind of part of this like cliquish thing with LeBron James that didn't quite click with the rest of the locker room. And so he leaves. They definitely lost something from that bench. And he goes to Miami. And they won a game against a much better 76ers team in the first round. And look, you don't want to be, oh, hey, they won one game. That's great for the Heat. But, you know, I told you on Locked On Heat, and we cover this way more in depth on there, but they probably get swept in that series if not for Dwayne Wade, which says a lot. You know, one game versus getting swept is enough. And so I thought he was really good for them down the stretch of last season. He just gives them an extra facilitator. He's sort of your backup point guard when Goran Dragic isn't on the floor. He's going to continue coming off the bench in that kind of role for the Heat this next season.
At least that's what we think.
Yeah, most likely, right? And so,
yeah.
And look, he's... that's probably the best position for him. We think that because he's not as consistent as he used to be. He can't go out there and just give you... regardless of the points, he can't go out there and put up 18 to 20 shots a game just every night. Yeah. Like, he just can't do that at 36 years old, but he can every once in a while. I mean, if you get 20 points from Dwayne Wade once a week, that's, like, the best-case scenario here, right? And so... Yeah. And he's capable. I think he's capable of doing that. I still think he's in great shape. He's in better shape. He's healthier now than I think he was towards the end of the Big Three era. Even if he doesn't have the same level of talent or the same peaks that he can reach, he looked healthy last year. His knees looked good last year. I think he can still contribute to this team. And look, at $2.4 million for a 1-year deal, that's a really good bargain for a player like Dwayne Wade.
Absolutely. Look, I think it fits perfectly with the culture, the identity of this team. You know, they're not led by any one superstar. And although Wade is that superstar in theory only, he's just another really good role player. And that's part of the problem, but it's also the strength of this team. You know, you've got so many players that you can rely on to kind of contribute in a meaningful way. Maybe it's not an excellent one. Maybe it's not an overly productive one. But you can get a lot of guys who can step up, do their job well, and if everything's clicking just right, you can have a pretty potent team. Not, maybe not necessarily an explosive one like Golden State or Houston. Maybe not the kind of lockdown defense that you play in Boston, but a good combination of the two where you can get just enough offense and some pretty solid defense to make this a really good team. Maybe not a great one, but, you know, it's not about a title. I think it's about maximizing the talent that you have on this roster. You've got young players that you want to continue to develop. You've got enough veterans surrounding them where you can help them reach another level. And I think it's going to be an interesting balance. Look, they may not be the most exciting team in the NBA to watch, but they're also interesting on many different levels, whether or not you're going to get the same kind of impact from Hassan Whiteside that you did three seasons ago before he signed his huge deal, how that rotation works out. Eric Spoelstra definitely has his hands full trying to figure out that balance. You've got three centers. You've got eight, you know, different shooting guard options. You've got a lot of different wing players there, a lot of versatility up and down that roster. So it's going to be a real challenge for Spoelstra to figure out that right balance. But I think Wade signing early, or not, you know, not necessarily early, but signing before camp opens gives them an opportunity to kind of work out those kinks. So we're going to see a nice flow, a nice chemistry between these players develop early on.
And then just sort of emotionally, we could debate having, you know, do you do the video or do you just sort of Tim Duncan, I'll decide at the end of the year, Manu Ginobili, we decide when I'm all done, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it's kind of nice, you know, knowing that this is Dwayne Wade's last dance, as he keeps saying. Like, it's nice knowing that it's Dwayne Wade's last season. It'll help you savor it. You know, everybody, you know, we do this show, people listening, you're NBA fans. That's why you're listening at the beginning of September. If you're an NBA fan, you're a fan of Dwayne Wade, period, end of story. Like, maybe you think you don't love how he draws fouls or whatever, but you've grown up for the last 16 years, you've been watching Dwayne Wade at the NBA. It's going to be weird when he's not, because he's, by all accounts, the third best shooting guard, you know, in league history. I want to get to that for a second right before we move on to our next segment, but it's nice knowing, like, all right, we got at least 82 more games of Dwayne Wade. I can savor it. I know this is the last bit of Dwayne Wade. That gives you a chance to savor it. Now, there is a debate a little bit on NBA Twitter, and it's sort of coming out recently. It was kind of, I saw it a little bit spring up last year. James Harden, Dwayne Wade, greatest shooting, you know, in the shooting guard rankings. Am I biased growing up a Heat fan is saying James Harden's not even in the conversation right now with Dwayne Wade? Like, wait until you win a championship?
Oh, I mean, I don't know that that's necessarily Harden's fault. You know, I don't know that the title necessarily was going to sway one player or the other. I mean, if you look at Wade's title in 2006, you could say he gained it, and certainly a lot of Mavericks fans would agree with me, that he gained it through the same kind of means that Harden does on a regular basis.
James Harden gained a career by watching Dwayne Wade do what he does. So fair enough. We'll call it even.
Yeah, so, I mean, as far as that's concerned, I think from Harden, you need a lot more consistent kind of style of play for another few seasons before he enters that conversation. But, I mean, it's like closer than a lot of people would argue.
Really? Because I feel like Wade's peak is so far and away what Harden has done. I mean, you look at what Wade has done in the playoffs as far as stepping up. It's very, like, I don't know, man. Like, it's just, he's done stuff that James Harden just hasn't done. He's reached heights. He's reached peaks that James Harden hasn't touched yet. And I'm just like, until you get there for me. Like,
I'm curious what to see what the clutch numbers are, because I'm not sure. I mean, I know Wade's hit a lot of big shots.
3-0. That's the clutch number.
Oh, come on. That title wasn't Dwayne's alone.
I don't know. Like, James Harden has, like, a history of kind of not being the best during the playoffs, where Dwayne Wade was always better in the playoffs.
That's fair.
Like, that's the stuff, right? Like, that's, like, Dwayne Wade rising to every playoff moment.
Hard to gauge what Harden was because of the years he spent behind Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant in Oklahoma City. So he's only been the leader of his team for, what, the past six seasons in Houston? But,
and what's,
you know,
really
Dwayne
beneath that
off.
Beard? We don't even know. There's so many questions with James Harden. All right. We'll talk a little bit more about the Rockets, specifically about if resting Chris Paul throughout the regular season could be the key to taking Houston over the top for them this year and getting James Harden that elusive ring. We'll talk about that next, but first, a quick word. In addition to the daily Locked On NBA show, the Locked On Podcast Network has a daily show for every NBA team, including the Rockets, who probably think Harden is better than Wade. So if you're a diehard fan who wants content on your favorite team every day, go to iTunes or your favorite podcasting app, search for your team, and then subscribe. The Locked On Podcast Network, the local experts on the biggest stories. All right, David, we got some quick hitting news items that we got to get to. first and foremost, this Chris Paul maintenance program. We just got done talking about Dwayne Wade. He was a maintenance program for on the maintenance program for a couple of years, 2013, 2014, a little bit in 2015 for Miami. Chris Paul is now entering that maintenance program after missing games in the Western Conference finals last year against the Warriors that might have tipped the scales in the Warriors' favors and got them to the finals. Houston was really good last year. They're hoping to be really good this year and get back to where they were in the Western Conference Finals last season. Do you think this Chris Paul maintenance program is what they... Do you think this is going to help them?
I think it'll help, but I think they're depleted in so many other ways. You know, they've lost a number of key role players, Luka Mbamute, you know, Trevor Ariza, etc. Now, there is a little bit more depth, I'd say, at the backup point guard position. You acquire Brandon Knight, You've got Michael Carter-Williams. These aren't great names that move the needle, but at least you have somebody who can competently step up there and hold the fort while Paul continues to rest. Look, he played, 36 minutes? I'm sorry, no, that can't be right. What did he play last week? Oh, 31 point, almost 32 minutes per game last year. That number has to be below 30, you know, in order for him to...
How many games did he play? Do you have it up?
So yeah, 58 games last year. Not great.
Well, so, he had that stretch where he was injured, though.
Yeah.
So he was playing most of the games he was available. Yeah.
You know, I'm not sure what that takes. If resting him is the key to more longevity. Look, I mean, these injuries have been somewhat a fluke for him, but they've happened throughout the course of his career. I mean, right. We've seen the graphic of his shoulder, his hands, his elbow, his knees. I mean, he's had a number of little injuries that kind of add up over the course of a career. He's entering his 14th season now. That's a heck of a number there.
I think if anybody needs a maintenance program, it's Chris Paul. And it's not that there's any one, like you said, there's not one particular thing that keeps bothering him. And there's a couple injuries crop up now and again, but you know, he's a small point guard. He's 6 foot. Zero,
if even,
right? Yeah, we've both stood next to him. I don't think he's 6 foot tall. He's a small guy. Small point guards break down historically in the NBA, and now's the time. Like, yeah, to go back again to the Dwayne Wade thing, we joke about the maintenance program. It worked. It helped Miami get to two more finals that they may have, or at least it helped them get to the 2014 finals against the Spurs. Yes, they got swept, but if they don't put Dwayne Wade on that maintenance program throughout the season, they probably don't get that far. You know, probably, and that we don't talk about that enough. And I think this is really going to help them. And really, when it comes to Chris Paul, this makes the Carmelo Anthony deal make a lot more sense. If you're going to rest Chris Paul, like instead of if he played 58 games where he wasn't injured for any of them, right? If you limit him to 60 to 65 games this year, under 30 minutes a game, and in those games where he's not playing, you let Carmelo Anthony be that other isolation option next to James Harden, which kind of was how, you know, that's how Houston's offense worked last year, was the two ISO guys between Paul and Harden. In those games where Chris Paul's not available, you let Melo take that other isolation role. This starts to make more sense, right? If Melo is almost the backup Chris Paul, this starts to make a lot more sense. Now, he's not the passer. He's not the ball handler like Chris Paul is, but he could do stuff, right? He can create his own shots still. Now this starts to make more sense. I'm actually a fan of it. I think this is a very smart move from Houston. If you're right, they lost a lot more talent, but if you're trying to figure out a way, okay, we don't need to be better than we were in the regular season last year, because chances are we're not going to be, but we need to be better than we were in the playoffs last year, and key word, we need to be more healthy than we were in the playoffs last year. This is a way to do it. And it might not work, but hey, it might work, so you got to try it.
Well, it's not going to work. you're taking a chance, and I can appreciate that you're doing what you can. Look, I know Rockets fans come at me. I'm ready for it. I wrote about this last year. I really don't think, even though they went to a Game 7 with Golden State, that the Warriors at any point in time were worried about what the Rockets represented. Maybe if Paul had, you know, been healthy for that Game 7, maybe it would have made a difference. I really don't
Iguodala
think so.
Iguodala was hurt, too. That was a big
I'm sorry?
Thing. Iguodala was hurt in that series, too, and that was a big thing. They think the Warriors internally believe that if Iguodala were healthy, it would not have even been a series. But I do disagree with you. Iguodala was hurt, and I do think that they were worried. They were on the ropes there a little bit. Like, that was the hardest series that they've had since Durant came over. And so since the Warriors have been the Warriors.
That's not saying
so,
much, though.
That's true. All right, let's move on. We got a couple more things, but this is a really big deal. I think it's a big deal to me. I don't know. Is this a big deal to you? Brent Berry, hired by the Spurs. Brent Berry, friend of Locked On NBA, has been on this show before and was a great guest. You want to know why he was a great guest? Because he was a great analyst for TNT. He was so, like, he just had such great things to say about the sport. He was very insightful. He was very smart about it. You could tell he really, you know, took notes and gave a lot of thought into things. He listened to the team-based shows on the Locked On Podcast Network to get more in tune, you know, with the local angles and stuff like that. And it was, he was really good. He put the work in, which is not something you could say about a lot of color analysts. I'm just going to say that. And so, and the reason
one of the few that refers to analytics and, you know, true shooting percentage, things of this sort, like there aren't
with
many that
not tongue in cheek, right? Actually, uses
And knowing what he's talking about and how he uses these statistics, it's great. Look, he follows basketball Twitter to some degree. Mm-hmm. I mean, he does his research, as you said. It's not just a player's perspective, which he absolutely brings to the table, but it's also an analytical one, which makes him a great fit for the Spurs front office. But at the same time, I'm going to miss hearing him cover games. There's not a lot of great options behind him as far as color analysts are concerned. Only so much Reggie Miller and Chris Webber I can stand hearing. But yeah, that's it.
Mark Jackson's another bad one. And Jeff Van Gundy's shtick is old. And I'm not the first one to say that by any stretch. But it's just like, Brent Berry was the dude that I looked forward to. You know, him and Doris Burke are like, that's it. Those are the people. Otherwise, I'm muting the television. Sorry. I just am. And so, and we bear the lead. Brent Berry, hired by the Spurs front office. He's working there. And for all the reasons we just said, he put his homework in, you know, just like us. Maybe the Spurs will hire us. And then who's going to do Locked On NBA Tuesdays? Who knows? But I don't know who they replace him with. It's just, look, Brent Berry wasn't in prime time in the first place. So for TNT, for Turner, it's not that big of a deal, I don't think, unless they really had Brent Berry, like, tapped as the next big one. But you got to think that they knew, right? Like, they had a hint that maybe that's why they didn't move him up to primetime, because they knew that he'd be going to a front office job. They had an inkling. But, man, that's going to – like, Doris Burke is the only person I care about listening to now, period. Yeah, just color-wise. That doesn't include play-by-play people, but – yeah,
we've been lucky enough to talk to her. She's a great basketball mind. I mean, we're both big fans of what she does, and she deserves as much opportunity as more than anybody, to be honest with you, because she works twice as hard as everybody else. And look, it's going to be tough. It's going to be a pretty big hole to fill. I don't know that there are a lot of other big names that could step up in that perspective.
Can I give you three names? I want you to tell me which one you'd prefer.
All right, do it.
Dwayne Wade.
Okay.
Vince Carter.
Right.
Chris Bosh.
Bosh is the best of those options just because I think he's got a worldlier perspective. And I think he's been away from the game long enough to have a different perspective. And I think he can also incorporate more statistical information, at least better statistical information than the other two. I'm not a big fan
he's
of
polished.
Carter's work.
Chris,
yes,
he's Paul. Like the times he's been on the TNT show with Barkley and all of them, like and stuff. He's been on ESPN a couple times. Like he's polished. He's good. He's got like the 30-second sound bites ready to go. Like he's good.
Yeah, I mean, look, I like Bosch better than Carter. I'm not a big fan of hearing him in summer league or during the junior NBA World Championships. Not necessarily a great speaker. I think Wade. You know, he's more of a studio guy, I think.
I agree.
Give that perspective there, so that would be better. I think Bosch, covering games, I think he'd be willing to do the research. But the problem is he's not exactly able to travel either, so I don't think that's a likely option.
No, that's a really good point. I didn't even think of that. I mean, you could just base him in L.A. because the Lakers are going to be on almost every national TV game for the next 4 years or whatever. So
Good point.
All right, quick other hitters really quick. Jamal Crawford and the Celtics have mutual interest. And Jarrett Jack signed with the Pelicans. Does any of that matter to you?
Look, I like Crawford. I don't think the Celtics are lacking scoring punch off the bench, but he's certainly a capable scorer. I think it's more, you know, interesting to see that he left that sinking ship in Minnesota that after his long career, having played for half the league's teams, he recognized, look, I got to get the hell out of here.
Blow it up.
He was willing to leave there. So I'm curious to see how he fits alongside Boston. I mean, it's not a bad option, right? I think the Celtics are certainly poising themselves to take the Eastern Conference throne. And I think, you know, between them and Toronto, I think that's probably clearly the race in the East.
I hate both of these fits. I don't like either of these. But I'm trying to be an optimist about things lately, David, and because I'm starting to Jones for the NBA to come back because now we have to talk about Jarrett Jack on this podcast. So that probably signals it's about time for the league to come back. But Jamal Crawford, Celtics, okay. Brad Stevens knows how to hide point guards who aren't good in defense. Isaiah Thomas, Kyrie Irving. He knows how to do this. So if you're looking for that off the bench, all right, I don't hate it. And then Jarrett Jack to the Pelicans. Never really been a fan of Jarrett Jack's game, but you know, if you look at what he did with Steph Curry at the start of Curry's career in Golden State, allowed Curry to play off the ball a little bit more. The Pelicans really discovered something there with playing Drew Holiday off the ball. you know, towards the end of last season with Rajon Rondo. Jarrett Jack, ball dominant point guard, allows Drew to play off the ball a little bit more. So in theory, I see it. I'm trying to be an optimist here. In general, I don't think either of these moves make the needle. I don't think Crawford is good enough to get a lot of minutes for the Celtics. I think that team's too deep. And I don't think Jarrett Jack is good enough to play point guard for the Pelicans. I just think that they'd be better served going younger or just allowing Drew to really come into his own at that position. It's September 17th, and this is what we're talking about right now. So,
ooh, yeah.
All right. Well, that's all we have for today. You can subscribe to Locked On NBA on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We'll be here next Tuesday. You can find us on Locked On Heat. In the meantime, thank you for listening. Thanks for joining me, David.
You got it, Wes.